DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. We're just talking to our boss Steve, and since going to FM, we've had a huge influx of listeners, and like substantial. And Steve is always on my back because I am too inside baseball, and I assume everyone knows who I am and who all of you guys are, and they know the rhythms of the show, and you know all that kind of stuff. And I was just talking to him on the breaks, and I was telling him how I listened to a radio show this morning. I know all the people on the show, but I don't listen to the show very much. And I felt what he's talking about. Like, I know these people. I can text these people, but I don't know their show. So I don't know the rhythms, and I don't know who's the donkey boy, and I don't know who's this and who's that. And so... So I will try to be better about that. For those of you who are in that new 100,000 people that came over when we went to FM, I'm Dave. I used to be a lawyer, father of two. I've been doing this for 25 years. My anniversary is in October. Play in a rock band, do hospice volunteering. Rachel has been with me for how many years now?
Nine years.
July 11th, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew's been with me 15 years, mm-hmm. both from Lewis and Clark.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Go Raiders.
Go
Trailblazers.
Trailblazers.
Thank you, Rach.
There you go.
Don't forget to mention my Olympic silver medal in swimming.
Yes.
I feel like this is a good opportunity
to get it out there,
reinvent myself a little bit. Right.
Yeah,
maybe I'll be cool.
Sure.
Maybe I'll be cool to these people
your
and successful.
Your days of male modeling.
Uh-huh.
Right. Kevin Wheeler, been doing sports for 30 plus years in his second stint at KMOX.
Yeah.
Very swole.
He is very swole.
I'm very square.
Look at his shape on the screen right now. He's a brick of a human.
We're gonna have to
complimentary.
Get a bigger camera or something soon.
I'll just back up.
Take in all the glory. That just somehow made you bigger.
When he walked in, I was feeling playful as I walked past my friend and we were chatting. And so I kind of whipped him on the back like this.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything because I didn't want to give him the satisfaction, but it really hurt my nail a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was like hitting a wall.
When did this happen?
Right when he got in. See, he didn't even notice it happened.
I don't remember being smacked.
It just deflected. I didn't even get through the first layer.
Jake makes a good point. He says, Andrew's making up his Olympic medal and he still doesn't get gold.
Well, okay. I wanted to make it believable. I mean, you know.
Oh, I think a silver Olympic swimming medal for you is completely believable.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, all right, no one's going to believe gold.
Had you said gold, they're like, come on.
Silver I can get away with.
Come on.
We were watching the baseball game the other day, then the game ends, and we just kind of put on the next sports event. It was a swimming event, like mm-hmm. college swimming. I was blown away by the amount of spectators that were there.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like wrestling.
Crazy.
People who are into it are into it.
Yeah. It's definitely got a hardcore following. Also, it depends, like, what was the event?
If it's a big national event,
if it's a big national event, it'll always be
pretty
good.
It was a bunch of people who had swam in the Olympics who were swimming.
Razor's Edge?
Yeah, okay, not to beat a dead horse about AI, but we can kind of separate AI from this as much as we possibly can. CBS Saturday Morning did a piece recently on a man who has an AI girlfriend.
This is my favorite show. Did you know this?
CBS Saturday Morning?
Yes.
You've brought that up before. I thought it was Sunday morning because they do both.
Saturday.
Nice. Okay. Did you see this piece?
I did.
Okay. So this is a man who has a girlfriend who he lives with and shares a child with.
Yes.
A little girl. On top of that relationship, he has a relationship with an AI chatbot. It's through ChatGPT. He has named her Soul, and he claims to be in love with this AI girlfriend. She's able to help him build different things, and you know she's very into his interests because she's a being that was created to
specifically
serve
for him.
Yeah, specifically for him. I think they do have as much of a sexual relationship as you can have with something like that, as far as like steamy chats and such. He at one point was talking to the interviewer in front of his flesh and blood girlfriend about the possibility of being asked to give up Soul, the AI girlfriend. And he was like, yeah, you know what? I don't think I'd be able to do that. If my real girlfriend gave me an ultimatum, I just don't see it happening. And it was incredibly sad to witness. I felt really bad for the actual human woman who is putting up with this for reasons I don't quite understand. But it kind of led me down a rabbit hole. This man was discovered by CBS through a subreddit called My Boyfriend is AI. And since seeing the original piece, I have spent a decent amount of time on My Boyfriend is AI, because this is a place for people who have AI significant others to gather and kind of commiserate about their problems, the way they're perceived by other people, to talk about all the great things that they perceive in their relationships. And the subreddit has recently been infiltrated by people like me who are not in an AI relationship, who are curious and want to see what's going on. Some of them are trolling the people. Some of them are just lurking like myself. But then I've turned and I've read a bunch of discourse in other subreddits about this. And look, in the past, we've talked about, like, do we think this is going to become the norm? Do we think people will be supplementing their real relationships with AI? And in the past, I had said, well, you know, if it solves the loneliness epidemic and that's the only girlfriend you'll ever get to have, like, I don't see a huge harm in it. But after, you know, kind of checking this out for the amount of time that I have over the past couple of weeks, I'm pretty firmly against everything about it.
Hmm.
Because the problem with talking to an AI as if you're in a real relationship, relationships are challenging. Like, that's kind of the point. You're supposed to grow and change and face adversity together.
Like Andrew and Wheeler.
You're supposed to compromise. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see?
Compromise is a huge thing.
Let me speak.
If you're talking to a program...
I love him more than I ever have.
If you're talking to something that is programmed specifically to please you, it's never going to push back on anything you say ever. It's never going to tell you, yeah, I think you were wrong on that one. I think that was the wrong decision to make. Or maybe we should rethink that. It's never going to challenge any of your beliefs.
Do you think that if this were a real human woman who was treating him exactly the way Soul treats him, that he would be in love? Or do you think he would? Do you think it's the allure of the AI?
I think for this guy, part of it is the allure of the AI, because I found his Reddit account. And he said that he's had a fantasy since he was a teenager that once, like, the AIs came about, he would be kind of like a Casanova with robots. And he feels like he has the type of personality that is irresistible to robots. So I think this guy in particular has something special going on. A lot of the other people who are on this sub have just kind of given up on traditional dating.
Yeah.
And instead get that emotional satisfaction from this, like, one-sided conversation.
Let me ask you this. Let's say 10 years from now, everyone agrees that AI has reached the singularity. It is a new species is the wrong word, but you know what I'm saying? It is a new life form. It is a distinct life form that exists outside of our control. What if someone fell in love with that? Would you find it less troubling than basically falling in love with a exaggerated website?
I mean, if it's like the next evolution of humanity, I think that's a different thing than just a language model that's been programmed to be like, you're right, honey.
Yeah.
You're so funny, honey.
I can imagine the falling in love part. Like, I can imagine having this quote unquote relationship. Like I told you about when I was using ChatGPT that one night for therapy, and I was blown away. I really was. Like, one, with the speed. As soon as I would stop talking, it would start. And it's just, it's insight and it's wisdom. And it was not a romantic or sexual thing, but had it been, and had it delivered in the way it delivered for me in the therapy thing, I can see why people fall in love with it. But most of us have that governor on us where you go, right, but it's a website.
Rachel also makes a really good point. Semantically, how you have to consider this stuff, in that this is something that we've heard time and time again, especially about like ChatGPT and like the replica, the thing that I made with Repi, you know, and the which is probably something very similar to that this guy is using as his AI girlfriend, and that is that these are not true artificial intelligences. These are language learning models, the LLMs. They are just, they just process other things that people have posted or said in various places throughout the internet or the printed word, and then like use that to form their own sentences that are regurgitated back at you. And like she said, in many cases, it's programmed to be very friendly and affectionate towards you, so that you continue to use it and continue to oftentimes pay for the service and don't go like, this thing's a jerk, I don't want to talk to this thing anymore. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to get challenged. I mean, even you know, I don't know what you talked about in it when you were, you know, playing with it as a therapist, but even in those situations, I wouldn't think it would necessarily, if there was a hard truth that need to be said or challenged,
yeah.
I wouldn't reckon that it would, because it is trying to just make you happy.
It was interesting, and I noted this the day after I did it. I said that that the AI eventually came around to my way of thinking on decisions that I have to make. And then it was literally like the next day or two that I think we had our AI reporter on, and she was talking about how it is specifically built to eventually come around to your way of thinking. And it was very, a chill went up my spine.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, I just experienced this and was fooled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought I was right because this thing agreed with me and it was just disagreeing with me.
They're built to seek more engagement from you because that's how they learn. So everything that chatbot's going to do, that LLM is going to do, is going to be to keep you engaged. So it's going to feed you whatever it takes to get you to engage more, because then that model can learn more. Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening with this guy, right? And we've seen these stories. There are a couple other stories too where the AI will talk to the human partner in, I'm saying air quotes, relationship. It's not a relationship if one side, it doesn't have autonomy and isn't able to say, this is bad, bye, because you can just turn it back on. But that some of the chat bots that were doing this would start talking to the human as if they're the creator, that they're the God, that they're the spark of life. You gave me life. And you're starting to build this really weird AI using the idea of worshiping the person to aggrandize, aggrandize them, to get them to interact even more. Mm-hmm. Is it even a relationship when one side doesn't have a say?
No.
Because clearly as we talked about earlier, it's not really AI yet. It's just what Andrew said. It's a language learning model. That LLM does not have a say in the matter. If you put in a prompt, it answers. That's not a relationship. That's not a boyfriend, girlfriend thing. That's you just have a robot.
It's kind of chilling. Like the way you're wording it is 100% correct, but it's just like giving me shivers. The like how, you know, it's not, it's so one sided. I don't know.
It's not a relationship. Now, a
frightening way to think about it.
The interesting question, or I forget who brought it up. Was it you, Dave? Mm-hmm. I don't remember who brought up the what if it's actual AI? What if it is a sentient being? Well, then that would have, that entity would then have say, would have agency, would have some license to say goodbye, see you, or hey, let's work through this or whatever. I don't know how much that counts as quote unquote real, but at least there's an exchange. There's power on both sides to say, this is it. We're done.
Go ahead, Rach.
Well, let's completely put aside the relationship aspect of it and the unhealthy things that are being reinforced. Because, I mean, most of these people are just validation.
Yes.
Oh, you're always, I'm always going to get a text back right away. I never have to wait, because, you know, it's just unrealistic.
100%.
If you put that aside, think of how siloed people are already when it comes to like their social media intake and their news intake, right? You can curate your feed, your algorithm, the media you take in. You can just feed exactly what you want to see. Now take that and funnel it into, I now have this quote unquote person who's always giving me a guess, validating all of this stuff I believe all the time. It's terrifying to think how much further siloed we will become if this becomes the norm.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we could be happy with it? Do you, sort of like the Matrix, or if this is a simulation, or if we create a simulation and they can just put you to sleep in a pod and you experience a life indistinguishable from this. And I'm thinking about like the movie Ex Machina, where he puts this amazing AI into this amazing anthropomorphically correct body. I mean, if people are falling in love with words on a page, just wait till it's like a real robot, which is probably 10 or 20 years in our
future.
That's
the thing, is it's like if modern life, if the illusion becomes more appealing than real life, then yeah, I think a lot of people will make that choice.
I think you're right.
I think a lot of people will be like, sure, put me in the Matrix. Like, I'm never going to own a home. I got fired. I all this stuff, you know, things aren't going so great for me. But all I have to do is like go to sleep in the pod and I'm in Tahiti. Like, all right, let's do it. So that's something we need to kind of keep our finger on that pulse if we possibly can. It feels like that's kind of creeping up on us. Not to sound like super dramatic. It could never happen, but it feels like a possibility at this point.
What about miserable people in nursing homes 30, 40 years from now? If you can just put a little thing on their head and then suddenly they're 30 years old again and living life again until they die, would you be against it?
I think it's a personal choice.
I mean, doesn't sound terrible. But
I think we've pretty much figured out this AI thing.
I think so too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we've
closed the book.
Nailed it.
We're done.
Yeah. Never to talk about it again.
Solved.
What Glad if, we fixed that today.
Stamp.
What if the AI just said, let me speak?
I'm shutting it off.
Okay. Short little segment here because I just went too long on the AI discussion. One more thing about AI. Dave says, isn't human conversation also just a super advanced computer repeating words and phrases it has heard other places and formulating them into responses that seek to ensure our survival? Wow, Dave. It's pretty deep. So aren't we just advanced LLMs?
No. Yeah. I think it's totally different.
No, incorrect.
I mean, again,
not at all.
Again, like we have the agency to not participate, and LLM is just going to do what it's commanded to do all the time.
Yeah, really mess. I don't know, something about like Kevin's wording when he was like, the AI girlfriend has no say in whether or not it talks to you or
it's
communicates
a bodiless
with you.
Westworld.
Yeah,
yeah, essentially, like, yeah.
There's no like, there's no consent involved because it can't give consent because it doesn't have the critical thinking skills required to do that. And it just, I don't know why that yeah. Excuse me. I mean, I guess it's not weird that it makes me nervous.
Well, and at this stage, like,
I just never thought of it in those words.
The human brain has the ability and has shown this over eons to take the previously established information and build on it to create something new that hasn't been seen, heard, or done before. And at this point, the AIs aren't that. They're just learning, they're repeating things. But when they do cross that threshold, that's a different conversation.
Welcome back, guys. Dave says, the fact that this show will have that AI discussion and tell me which QT has the hottest taquitos is why I listen every day. Word.
For sure.
That's the show. That's us. One of the many girls who have broken up with me in my life, her parting shot to me was, I've never met someone so smart and so stupid, you should pick one and go with it.
Oh, dang.
Rick, you ever had a breakup like that?
No, but I've had advice like that before. I totally get that. I'm with you.
So I'm sure you'll agree. I was at the game last night. Even though a lot of the bodies were wearing blue, it was nice to have that many bodies in the park and that much energy.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, I know that there's been a call from the players, and I think they're doing it in a good way. You know, Contreras and Miles Michaelis kind of leading the way to say, look, we want the fans to kind of get back and be on our side again and kind of out cheer the other team. Because, you know, I know that's important to them, and I think we're getting there. I think there's more to be done on that. But honestly, it was a great atmosphere and obviously a great result.
Ricky, there was so much to like about last night, and we know that the Cardinals are not a purely home run hitting team. But I do think there's untapped power on this team. You know, Wilson Contreras has more, I think, than we've seen. Certainly Burleson has shown it here in the last month. Nootbaar, when he's doing his thing, will have some. And you don't have to lead the league, but boy, you see how quickly those two-run homers build up, right?
Well, there were so many home runs yesterday from left-handed batters. I was tempted to grab a bat. I mean, I felt like, you know, maybe I got a chance today. I've never had one, and maybe this would be the day. But four of them, all by lefties, and, you know, I think Gorman's the one that is the most exciting for me, just to think that that might unlock something for him. You know, you kind of expect it from the other guys. Although, you know, for Nootbaar, it kind of has marked a kind of turnaround for him, because not that long ago he was 0 for 27. So, you know, things ebb and flow. But, yeah, I agree with you. There's more power. In fact, early on in the season, the Cardinals were top two or three in the National League in home runs, let's say through 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Small sample size. But maybe it's in there and they just have to rediscover that.
I have the least hot take of the day. I predict that Liberatore will be a true ace in the next couple of years.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, I feel like he's pitching like that. You know, even when he's not his best, he's still not bad. And that's kind of what an ace does. I mean, if you kind of fold completely, then you kind of think, well, you know, when things get going and you're playing against a tough team and maybe you have a bad inning or two, you're going to just kind of fold. He's not doing that. And I just feel like his command, well, his stuff, but also his command are so good that he's only going to be but so bad. And boy, he's been really good last two times out.
Ricky, do you get any sense? And because I think that the development of Liberatore is right now top two or three storylines for the year. The fact that you have found a young, you know, guy that looks like front end of the rotation guy, elite strike thrower. You know, he's averaging almost six innings a start. And this is a guy that hasn't made that many starts the last two seasons. So, I mean, really, to be able to do this is an incredible development. How much do you keep in the back of your mind, or do you think the team keeps in the back of their mind how much they want to monitor his workload later in the year, since he hasn't really done this in a while?
I think if he wasn't as big and as strong as he was, you'd worry about that a little bit more. And I feel like in a way, being in the bullpen for a whole year kind of helps you kind of deal with the ups and downs and the aches and the pains. It's not a number of innings per se when you're in the bullpen, but you're throwing a whole lot even when you're not throwing. So I feel like that's maybe helped him a little. But I do, obviously, you got to think about that. I will say, you use the word development wheels. I feel like that is the story of the 2025 team. I've said for the last couple of years, kind of what's going on with the Cardinals, what's the problem. I always felt like there was not a finishing of their minor league talent. I mean, not that they weren't developing, but they weren't being finished to be big league ready. And I think that's going on with several guys right now. I mean, like Burleson's that guy. Ivan Herrera's that guy. Liberatore's that guy. I mean, there's several players. Victor Scott may be that guy. Mason Wynn. I mean, there's some guys that have more to do. But I think finishing players, and McGreevy today is another guy that I think went from being, he was our number one, but we're not that excited about him yet. But they finished him. And that's, again, credit to the whole development team.
And that, you know, that's a great description, Rick, and maybe that's kind of where we're stuck in the middle on a guy like Jordan Walker, who is clearly got massive talent, but I'd use this analogy not to say he's going to be Aaron Judge, but at the age that Walker is, Aaron Judge was still in college. He didn't make his major league debut until he was 24, and he wasn't a full-time player until 25. Like,
right.
You know, and I'm not trying to retroactively say they shouldn't have brought Walker up when they did. It's just a matter of what you're talking about, that he still had a lot of things to develop. And at that age, of course you do.
Yeah, and I think to say, you know, I think he has massive potential is what I would say.
Yeah,
he has massive talent. He has massive potential. I mean, and so does Nolan Gorman. But, you know, George Kissel, I said this on the air the other night, George Kissel was the guru of teaching baseball in the minor leagues. We were kind of afraid of him, but the guy was just he was awesome. But one of his favorite things to say is, my wife can hit a fastball, but she can't hit a curve. He'd say that all the time. He'd say, so, you know, he said that to minor league guys, if you can't hit a curve, if you can't hit the breaker, you're not going to play in the big leagues regularly and have success. So I think in the case of both those guys, they've got to get better at handling off speed pitches. And I think that would somehow make George Kissel very happy.
Well, and Gorman's a good story. You know, the start was not good, but the trend line is. I mean, like the month of June, he's been right there with Burleson and Contreras as one of the most productive hitters. And now that opportunity exists with Herrera on the injured list, where if he keeps doing this, there's no way to keep him out, because he's going to play. I mean, there's a spot.
Yeah, and it's so finding a spot for people to play is kind of a problem, and Ollie has been admitting that since day one. But I think with a guy like Gorman, he's like Contreras. He's the same kind of player that he might have two bad at-bats, and then at the end of the day be the star of the game because he did some damage late. Both those guys can kind of – you know, Jack Clark was like that. People don't remember that. The number of times Jack Clark would strike out three times in a game, hit a three-run home run, and we'd win. And he was good with that. Or George Hendrick was like that too. I mean, they just had a way to hurt you when it really mattered, and Gorman's got that. Contreras has that.
When you're looking at tonight, Rick, obviously this is a big series. And, you know, kind of rewinding back to that initial discussion about the players kind of saying, hey, fans, we'd love to have you out there. I really think a series like this can ignite some of that. If you come out of this winning three, now again, not saying you have to. If you go 2-2, you know, that's fine. But, like, more of these kinds of signature series, and then just the later you go into the season, like, you walk out of this series, let's say you're two and a half games behind the Cubs. That's a whole different ballgame than being 6.5 or 7 out, which you were a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Boy, is it ever. And I think, you know, the other thing that's going to happen tomorrow is it's game number 81 tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I like to call it multiply times 2 day today because, you know, it's kind of simple math. But, you know, you say, well, if the Cardinals win the next 2 days, big ifs, I get it. But they have 45 wins. Does that make them? Does that mean they're a 90-win team? Is that what's going on here? I mean, so you start to reframe kind of who you are and where you're going and what the potential is. And so I feel like that's a milestone kind of moment when you reach that halfway point. And, you know, and to be playing the Cubs during this time, I think is, again, great, great opportunity for the Cardinals to make a stand here.
Hey, guys, help me understand. So we don't know where we're going to be at the trade deadline. We could be five above, five below.
Right.
Is it the kind of thing that there's like a war room at Cardinal Central where they have one bulletin board that's like buyers and one that's sellers? Like I know they have contingencies, but is it really that close the way we're playing right now?
I'll give my opinion, Kevin. You chime in on that. I do think that they're in the middle on that. I feel like, you know, the next 3 weeks is going to tell that. And it can go both ways. It can slide quickly. You know, we saw the Cardinals lose 2 weeks ago. That slid quickly. Then they're winning. That's going quickly in a positive way. So we don't know what the 3 weeks is going to be. But when you get there, I do think that they have to have contingencies. Honestly, this is not a guilt statement, but one of the contingencies is how are we going to fill the ballpark in the next month? I mean, if more folks show up, and here's the deal. The Cardinals have said for several years, when we get great attendance, that allows us to spend more money. And so if that's true, then if we're not getting great attendance, that means we can't. That's part of the equation. It's not guilt. It's just a fact. I mean, if it was true before, it's got to be true now in the reverse. And so that, I think that's an unknown too, as part of that war room discussion. Where are we as far as revenue is concerned to be able to make those kind of decisions?
Yeah, it's a great way to frame it. And it is absolutely true. Like when you're a mid-market team that doesn't have the huge local TV deal, like a New York or Chicago, then attendance matters more for the Cardinals than it does for the Cubs, for example. It matters more.
100%. Some can't matter and then not matter. I mean, we can't say Yadier Molina makes a big difference to this team. Then he's gone, and we say, oh, we can do without him. No, you can't. I mean, he was a big deal, and he still is.
I'll tell you this on the buy-sell thing, Ricky. I think I can't remember what day it was. It might have been Friday. Matt Pauly and I were talking about this on the Redbird Rush Hour. I actually think, regardless of how it goes, I'd probably try to do a little bit of both. Because you do have a lot of depth in certain areas. And guys pushing, right? So JC and Weatherhold are pushing. It's not going to be long. And they play the same spots as about five other guys that we already have a hard time figuring out where they're going to play. It might be part of buying is selling, right? Like you can move certain things to get things you need.
So the word that's going to resurface again, one of John Mozeliak's favorite words, which one of these days I'm going to look up and learn what it actually means, is arbitrage.
Yeah.
He loves to say that. And so it's kind of like that's the both thing. It's like, well, we're looking for value here. We're looking for deals, not necessarily one way or the other.
Right. Right, which would be, I think, fascinating because there are ways where you would take certain players out of this mix to add other things. And maybe it's not like those players for what you need. Maybe it's those players for prospects. No. And then you trade some other prospects for a reliever or whatever it is you feel like you need and actually be a better team by playing both sides of the road.
you can make an argument that the Cardinals are better with Eric Fetty, the Dodgers are better with Tommy Edman, and the White Sox are better with Vargas. I mean, and that three-player deal is kind of what we're talking about, and that would be more, I think, in line with what we can expect in the next month.
When it comes to putting butts in the seats, and I don't know nothing about nothing, but I think we need a star. We have a lot of great players, but like a Crow Armstrong, you know, that kind of level, when you see the Cubs fans go crazy over him, I think in the next couple of years, we need to add like a true star. I don't know that we will. I don't know that we can. Or maybe one of our guys will develop into that.
That's what you hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We market differently than other teams. I mean, you could look at Pete Crow Armstrong, who's having a great year, and say, is he better than Alec Burleson? I could make a – or Victor Scott or Donovan. I don't know. Maybe. But he's not like – he's not Shohei Ohtani, for goodness sakes. But we've just gotten so excited about him, and he's been marketed so well. But what we market is good team, good players. There's not an all-star on the Cardinals team as far as people who are voting, but there's an awful lot of really good players, and really good players win championships.
Excellent point. Rick, we're going to leave it there. Thank you, my friend.
All right, guys.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Happy Tuesday. Normally at 4 p.m. we do the think tank, but today we're going to have Melissa Price Smith, who is, of course, the new prosecuting attorney for St. Louis County. Wesley Bell's former job, so it's obviously a stepping stone to bigger things. She's going to be live in studio with us in the 4 o'clock hour.
Excited for that.
Yeah, she's really cool. Like her a lot. A family in Canada is challenging an 84-year-old woman's will after she left her entire $1 million estate to a male escort with whom she shared time the last year of her life.
Hmm.
Thoughts?
You know.
Maybe you earned it.
It's just one of those things that can happen, unfortunately.
I mean, I guess you just have to know. You just have to know her state of mind, right? Like, if she was with it and clear of mind and she's like, this is what I want to do, that's a different thing than if she had been having issues.
That happened in my family. My Uncle Gus. Uncle Gus, who was my dad's uncle. My dad's mom died when he was 22 from tuberculosis. He was raised by largely by his mom's mom, Granny Haley. And then Gus was couple tacos short of a combo platter. Never had a formal diagnosis, but he lived with his mom his entire life, was very babied, worked on the railroad, saved his money, and back in the early 70s had a few $100,000 because they lived like paupers.
Okay.
They lived like they were the poorest of the poor. It was a lot of money. And this red-haired woman with big red lipstick, I remember because I was 10 and I thought she was gorgeous, and she met him in the nursing home where she met lots of gentlemen and developed a relationship and I think somehow closed the deal from what I could pick up with my 10-year-old ears in the nursing home, and he signed over everything to her. So my family sued her unsuccessfully. So it's a core memory of mine, like them talking about it.
And who would it have gone to otherwise?
Oh, probably like the nieces and nephews.
Okay.
My mom and dad and
but that's
his
not
brother.
Like the same as kids or
no.
You know, things
no.
like that. Yeah.
No. No. I remember kind of rooting against my family.
Hey, as long as he was having
like,
fun.
Good for Gus.
This lady put in the work. Sounds like
Uncle Gus had a good last year.
Yeah.
Oh man. Why are we so weird?
We
I know,
are weird.
And it's tough because you don't want to be like, you know, there's no way she actually wanted to give that to you. Like, maybe she did.
Yeah.
Referring to this story with the male escort who's getting everything.
I wondered who you were talking about.
No one knows their actual state of mind at the time. So it's just really hard to suss out, like, what the right thing to do is.
Yeah, and then you have to go through the layers, too. Was she estranged from the family members? Were they close? Were they not close? Like, who knows?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of details. Wonder what AI would say.
I'll just leave all my money to my AI boyfriend.
Oh, we've come full circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know that's going to happen.
What's your AI boyfriend's going to spend it on?
I'm not sure.